there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Picture 21,000 acres, a public wildlife habitat that lies within the scablands of Washington's Columbia Plateau. The ecosystem is dominated by sagebrush shrub steppe, dotted with mesic grasslands, wetlands, potholes, and ponds. This habitat is home to upland game birds, various species of songbirds, raptors, reptiles, amphibians, and mule deer. Several Washington state at-risk species also exist. One of the most critical is the Columbian sharp-tailed grouse. It's a special place and one of the last of its kind on the Columbia Plateau. What if I told you that this habitat, Swanson Lake Wildlife Area, was decimated in a matter of hours?
And welcome to On the Wing podcast presented by Purina Pro Plan. We're here to discuss the project that Marissa Jensen just got done reading an excerpt about from last year's grand prize winner for our annual Hands-On Habitat Month run in the course of May. That's a story about resilience. It's a story about it, what it means to come together as an upland community to get our hands dirty in the name of conservation. And we're recording this episode just in time to help inspire you to get out and participate in Hands-On Habitat Month this May. Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapters all across the country are hosting habitat work days throughout the month of May. Volunteerism has driven our organization since its creation, and now is the perfect opportunity to learn more about your local chapter, engage with your local community, and get your hands dirty for habitat. Back this year for Hands-On Habitat Month is our incredible partnership with Onyx. And Onyx is not only a longtime national sponsor of PF and QF, supporter of this podcast, and a contributor of Public Access, but they're the presenting partner of Hands-On Habitat Month. If you want to follow along online as we talk about this campaign, you can go to pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. Joining us today to discuss last year's efforts and upcoming promotions around Hands-On Habitat, you heard her voice to start the episode, the quarterback of Hands-On Habitat, the Habitat Education Programs Manager, and at least once upon a time, a frequent punch card carrier of this podcast, Marissa Jensen. We also got Andy Fondrick, the head coach of the Princeton hockey team, not that Princeton, but Princeton High School in Minnesota, and the marketing manager for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and our featured guests, Jeff Ennis, the president of the Spokane Inland Empire chapter of Pheasants Forever. And Mike, I should have asked you this when we were talking. I'm gonna take a swing. Is it Mike Grunky?
Grinky.
Like,
yes, very good though.
Like the Kansas City Royals pitcher Zach Greinke.
Yes.
You just spell it differently. Yeah. So Mike Grinky is the chapter habitat chairman for the Spokane Inland Empire chapter of Pheasants Forever. So after that long, belabored intro, thank you, listener, for joining us. Let's start with a little bit of introductions. We'll go around the horn just quickly with Marissa and Andy, talk about where you're calling in from, what you do real quickly for the organization, then we'll get to our featured guests. And Marissa, since you're riding co-host for this episode, we'll let you go first.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Excited to be here, excited to be back. I had to dust off the headphones a little bit and dig around to find them. And but feels like I've haven't, you know, hasn't been long. So I am in Omaha, Nebraska, and as you mentioned, work as the Habitat Education Programs Manager for the organization. I get to do everything from, you know, work with volunteers on hands-on habitat efforts, also oversee our pollinator habitat outreach program, as well as milkweed in the classroom. So a lot of really fun programs that I'm involved with, really passionate about the work we do and excited to be here, really excited about this conversation. We had a lot of fun before we hit record, so I'm looking forward to this.
We set the all-time On the Wing podcast technical difficulties time record leading into this one. So fingers crossed, we got this out of the way and we're ready to roll. All right, Andy Fondrick is, whether folks know this or not, he is our resident hockey expert within the Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever family. I mentioned he's a high school hockey coach, but we are going to put him on the spot as we record this in late April. This will come out in early May, so you could really stub your toe on this, Andy. Who will win the NHL Stanley Cup this season?
Well, I can tell you who won't. That would be the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh!
In the Stanley Cup.
Wow! Coming in high and hard. Ouch! Dang!
Nope, that was the toss-up. Sorry, had to go there. I did a confidence pool. Dallas was my winner, but I'm a little concerned missing a couple key players out of that series. So Vegas gets through Minnesota, which they likely will, but I kind of like where our Wild are running at the moment. So if they get through Minnesota, then they're probably the favorites out of the West.
See, but Andy, I'm proud of you because you're leading with courage as you talk. So as we record this, the Wild are up 2-1, yet you said just now that you think the Vegas Golden Knights are going to carry the day.
They're scary. They're good for a reason.
Wow.
We're the sixth seed for a reason, or the one wild card for the reason. So yeah, we'll seven, I guess. So no, I like the playoffs in general have been pretty entertaining so far. So I'm okay. I'd rather not see repeat champion this year, but I think the East is wide open, and yeah. But we're not here to talk hockey. We're not here to talk about hockey.
We're not. Tell us what you do for the organization.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm the marketing manager. So I work with Bob pretty closely, as well as Marissa and a number of other leaders within the departments across the org to help market our initiatives, such as our just like Hands on Habitat, some of the other major initiatives, Bowel Week, big onto the Pheasant Fest scene. If there's a digital component, chances are it's kind of come across my desk at some point. So I'm also pretty involved in the marketing of Shields and our apparel partnerships there, and kind of a little bit of everything in between. So I'm excited to be here talking about Hands on Habitat, because this is one of those programs that really just speaks to the core of what we do and why all of us are here. So this is an exciting one.
Right on. Speaking to the core of why we're here, let's start by thanking Jeff and Mike for once again volunteering their time on behalf of the organization. This is maybe a little bit easier load talking on a podcast as opposed to some of the other work that you do as a volunteer or as volunteers. But, you know, as three people that get paid as employees to work for this organization, thank you for what you do as volunteers of the organization. It absolutely makes a difference, and it's not lost upon us that your efforts are the lifeblood of the organization. So as we kick things off, thank you very much. We'll start with Jeff, who is the president of the Spokane Inland Empire chapter of Pheasants Forever in Spokane, Washington. We'll have you come off mute, Jeff, and tell us tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, maybe what you do for a living, and how you got involved as a volunteer.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Spokane, so I'm native to Spokane, and I was a teacher for 20 years in Spokane Public Schools and retired from that.
What'd you teach?
I taught elementary education, second grade, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, all of them, but primarily second grade. I did some combination classes. It was a great age, 7 and 8 year olds, you know. I lived off coffee so I could fight the energy with some of my own energy. I was able to raise my two boys after retiring. One of them is now at Ohio State. How do you guys feel about that? Okay.
Go Wolverines.
Okay. that team up north. My other one is a junior right now, and he's getting ready to go off to college too. So, that's just a little bit about my background and then how I came to Pheasants Forever, our chapter, by watching The Flush.
Oh, cool.
I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. So I would watch The Flush on a regular basis, and it was always mentioned about Pheasants Forever, and they promoted that. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to see if there's a chapter around. And there was. And so I emailed the chapter, and our president, prior to me, Mike Collier, reached out to me and invited me to a meeting. And I went to the meeting. And, you know, what's great about these guys and women in the chapter are they're just so open and welcoming to volunteers. I remember the first time I met Mike after the meeting was over, he was like, I hope we didn't scare you away. you know, he wants all volunteers to come back, and you know, our meetings have a lot of business kind of things that go on in it. And so my wife encouraged me to keep coming to the meeting. She wanted me to go out and be part of something. And and again, these guys are great, super welcoming, and have great attitudes, and they just really make our chapter click. So that's how I got started, and then I got nominated to be president. Mike wanted to step down. He had some other things to do, Mike Collier, and then I was nominated, and here we are.
Shout out to Ron Shera, Scott Franzen, Travis Frank, Bill Shirk, Aaron Ochtenberg, and the whole crew at The Flush. Thanks for helping get great people involved like Jeff. So that's a killer story. Thank you for telling it and being a volunteer, Jeff.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, Mike, it's your turn. Tell us a little bit about where you're from and your backstory.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Washington. I did leave Washington for about 3 or 4 years, but came back about 25 years ago. I live in Spokane. Been associated with Pheasants Forever since the beginning of the chapter, which I guess in October we're going to be celebrating our 25th year.
Hmm.
Or 20th year. So, it's been a great experience. You know, avid bird hunter, love the outdoors, like camping, fishing, all that good stuff. And like Jeff said, we've got a fantastic chapter, a lot of great people, great volunteers. It's been just a lot of fun. And I was able to retire about 3 years ago, and Pheasants Forever has been definitely keeping me busy ever since. So, it's been wonderful.
Awesome.
So.
Let me ask Jeff and Mike, what's your bird dog breed of choice? We'll start with Jeff. What do you got in your kennel?
Well, I've got my bird dog breed of choice is German Shorthair Pointer, and I have two of them right now. I've had one before that. I've got a liver and white one. His name is Smokey, and then I have a black and white GSP. His name is Jones, and they're great dogs.
Wow.
So love them. Well, love the pointers.
All right, Mike, it's coming to you because I know Marissa.
Well, you know what it's going to be. I mean, it's so funny. Our chapter, we actually divide the room. You know, we got the pointers on one side and the labs on the other side. So I'm a lab guy. So we have a lot of fun. My son actually has a German Shorthair Pointer, so that makes it interesting in the family as well.
Well, we are a house divided today on this podcast. And Andy Andy is the emblematic version of this. He's got he's got both.
I'm just excited to be a part of it. I'm just, you know,
the
young GSP, the old lab. I feel like I can fit in with anybody here. I'm happy to be here with you guys.
What do you guys think is you know, maybe most popular one and two breeds in the state of Washington amongst bird hunters? Any, you know, let's start with Jeff. What's your impression?
There's all kinds. I do see a lot of labs and I do see a lot of pointers. I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag. I would say it's 50-50 when I go out. I see both breeds. So I think, at least in the area where we're at, I've seen more GSPs lately than I have, like, say, 10 years ago. There's a lot more, seems, for people to have, but labs are popular too.
Yeah,
I know Mike likes to hear that. So
is that Washington a big duck hunting state, or is it more, you know, oh man, like people love chasing roosters with labs and quail with labs in Washington?
I think it's pretty well divided. You know, we've struggled with our pheasant population the past few years, but here recently we've had a really good resurgence in the bird population, probably the last 2 or 3 years. And last year was a really good year. And this spring, just going back and forth between our habitat projects, it's amazing the number of birds we're seeing along the roads. And that hasn't been the case for a number of years. So we're really excited. Hopefully Mother Nature comes through and we have a good spring. So we like to think it's because of us, but I don't really think that's the case.
Okay.
But we tell everybody that.
There's no doubt you're having a positive impact. So, and, you know, it's wonderful to be having this conversation with two volunteers from Washington. Literally, last week, I got, you know, a gentleman went after me on Twitter because we had not had a Washington oriented podcast yet. So guys,
interesting.
Thank you. You know, here we go. Checking another state off the list, and thrilled to have you talking about the state of Washington. I'm going to mention some words from Purina, then we'll pass the baton to Marissa to talk a little bit about hands-on habitat and lead the way. Like I mentioned at the outset, I'm proud to recognize Purina Pro Plan as the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. All of my pups eat Purina Pro Plan, and that's not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat mission of our organization. That is absolutely important to me, and it should be important to you as well. But what's most important is that Purina Pro Plan is a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. It's the best dog food out there for the working bird dog. Learn more at ProPlansport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right, Marissa, the basics of hands-on habitat. The proverbial baton is passed to you. Take it away.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I've got it. Didn't drop it. I'm really excited to talk about hands-on habitat. You know, I think you mentioned it earlier. You know, volunteerism is truly at the heart of who we are as an organization. And it has been since our inception. And hands-on habitat is an organization-wide opportunity. It's a challenge to you, you know, our listener, our chapters, our volunteers, supporters, to dedicate time this May, and really any month, but you know, we're emphasizing the month of May for Hands-On Habitat Month, to host or participate in a habitat project. And you know, these boots on the ground efforts are essential in conserving our uplands. And if that's not enough to get you excited to go out and participate in a project, Hands-On Habitat is a great opportunity to connect with your local community as well. Do something meaningful where you can truly see the immediate positive results of your efforts. The different projects that can qualify as a Hands-On Habitat project really just span from something that may take, you know, half an hour to an hour, to things that could take an entire weekend or longer. So, you know, examples would be pollinator or shrub plantings, maybe some pollinator habitat maintenance. We have a lot of chapters and volunteers that participate in the pollinator habitat outreach program. This is a great opportunity to go back and revisit one of those, see what needs to be done on those different plots. There could be tree and brush or invasive species removal, trash fence cleanup or removal, sign restoration. We have a lot of really cool signs out there on the landscape, just making sure that they're in pristine condition and that people can see them and read them and enjoy the work we've put into those, and guzzler installation for our wildlife out there. So really, the sky is the limit. If it improves and supports our uplands, it's likely to be a fantastic habitat project.
It's funny you didn't mention prescribed burning as a hands-on habitat project.
It's a fantastic project.
Although a drip torch requires a little bit more hand-holding than just going out there and starting a wildlife area and project. So we just want to throw that clarifier out there.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're in a statewide ban right now, so that might be why I was a little hesitant to throw that one out there.
Yeah, if you're going to do a prescribed burn, get a little bit more help. You got to sign some waivers. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, remember to sign your waivers. There's a nice little plug.
You know, as I think about the hands-on habitat projects I've participated in over the last few years, you know, what sticks with me is just how much trash I've helped and volunteers alongside me have helped clean up. So, you know, I guess it's a twofold message. One, it's like we'd like to be doing habitat work as opposed to picking up trash. So the second piece of that is folks, you know, if you see people throwing or dumping railroad ties and tires and barbed wire and just junk, I've seen boats and trailers and vehicles and snowmobiles in WMAs and state forests. And like, if you see this happening, you know, like we've got to police our own too. But to all the people that have gotten dirty picking up trash, thank you. You know, I don't want to be on the soapbox, but my goodness, like these are our public lands. Everybody's. The fact that people are dumping washing machines and dryers and a freaking snowmobile into a state forest, it's absolutely disgusting. So thanks to everybody that's picked up trash, no matter what it is. Even, you know, picking up your own shells, you know, gut piles, thank you. You know, for others that are listening and maybe sinned, for lack of a better term, let's be better. So I'll get off my soapbox, and Marissa, you can carry the conversation as you talk with Jeff and Mike about their project.
Yeah, no, you know what? That's a great soapbox to be on. And I think many of us have spent, you know, even fall in the field, picking things up and putting them in our vest. There's a lot of times I go home without an empty vest, but it's not full of what I want it to be full of. But yeah, I think, you know, to your point, every little bit, you know, makes a difference. And so, yeah, just, you know, excited to jump into the conversation here with Jeff and Mike to learn more about the project that you entered to win, you know, and won the grand prize this last year, and also, you know, what was on the docket for this year. So, Jeff, I think we'll start with you. Okay. Tell us a little bit about how you planned last year's hands-on habitat event at Swanson Lake Wildlife Area. What made you decide to go that direction?
Well, I, you know, I'm just going to speak a little bit about that, and I'm going to turn it over to Mike, because really he's the genius behind that. I just wanted to say that project was a collaborative effort, and there were a lot of people involved, and As far as the hands-on habitat project, one of our young members in our chapter, Brent Grinke, he brought this idea to us, and thankful that he did. He's really active in finding things for our chapter to do and keeping us moving forward with our chapter. So, but as far as the planning goes, Mike is, he's the guy behind that.
Mike, we're looking at you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, first of all, like Jeff said, Brent's my son, and he actually was a member of Quail Forever down in Oklahoma and lived down there for a number of years, and then he moved back to Spokane, and he received an email about hands on habitat and was very intrigued by that, and he proposed it at one of the chapter meetings that, hey, this might be something we should do. You know, we're doing a project. Why don't we enter into the contest? So he deserves a lot of the credit. And I said that was fine as long as he did all the work, you know, as far as the mission and all that other stuff. We had plenty of other stuff, habitat stuff to worry about. And he collaborated with Jeff and obviously put that narrative together on the project and everything, which was really great. But as far as how that project came about, there was a major fire in 2020 that just decimated that whole wildlife area out there. And you know, it's pretty barren ground. There's not a whole lot of brushy habitat, and obviously when a fire goes through there, it decimates all that brushy woody habitat. So that landscape, it was definitely in need of having you know, that type of habitat restored. So a couple of our members approached me and said, hey, have we thought about maybe doing a project out there, that wildlife area? And it just happened that I had a really good relationship with the area manager out there, Mike Finch, with the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Department. And we've worked with him on other projects and told him we were interested in doing a project. And he was all for it. And a few weeks later, he calls me and says, hey, we were just approached by the Spokane Audubon Society. They've got an ALEA grant for $7,500 that they would like to try to develop some habitat for the sharp-tailed grouse that they're trying to get established out there. It's like Jeff was saying, it's an endangered species there. So, you know, we thought, hey, that's great. Not only would it help the sharp-tails, but there's obviously pheasants and quail and other species that would benefit from that project. They kind of approached us. We kind of had the expertise. We've done these type of projects before. So they kind of let us run with it. They said, here's $7,500. Obviously, we collaborated on exactly what we wanted the project to look like. But we pretty much designed it, that the chapter, you know, our members and stuff, as far as putting the project together, ordering the materials. We had a lot of input from the state with regards to site location. That definitely is a challenge. I'm sure some of the other chapters out there deal with the same things we do, that this cultural review issue becomes a really important deal that you have to go through to get all the approvals before you can even start a project. So what we learned early on is you've got to start those projects early and to get all the approvals and stuff. But we got the approvals with the help of the state. They put a lot of resources into it and kind of expedited this project. And one thing led to another, and we designed this project, and it was just a great opportunity.
So I'm curious. I'm thinking about, you mentioned there's quail and there's pheasants.
Uh-huh.
The quail species, are they Valley California Valley quail?
Okay. California Valley quail.
Tell them, I've never hunted. Upland hunted in Washington. What's the limiting factor? What's the missing ingredients from a habitat perspective for pheasants? And is it the exact same missing ingredient for valley quail? Give us the lay of the land for those two birds in Washington.
Well, you know, I'm probably not an expert in that area, but my own personal opinion is it's pretty similar to other parts of the country. You know, nesting brood habitat are probably the two biggest limiting factors. We get a lot of noxious weeds out there that, you know, cheatgrass and not the native bunch grasses and stuff. So that becomes a challenge. Woody habitat, escape cover, winter cover. you know, we don't get the real hard winters that you guys are used to, but we do get some pretty good winters. And, you know, it's important for the quail and pheasants to be able to get out of that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, those days when you get that difficult weather. You know, we have a lot of raptors too, and I think it's important, especially for the quail, to be able to have a place where they can avoid those predators. But you know, again, every area is unique, right? Mm-hmm. As far as what that limiting factor is. So it's really hard to just say, you know, it's this. You go out and assess the area and you see what is the limiting factor. So,
and that you talked about the fire, did it burn all 21,000 acres of this wildlife area?
A good portion of it, yes. Wow. Yep. You know, it was just amazing. And it we had like 60-mile-an-hour winds, and it moved extremely fast. And a lot of that was sage brush and sheet grass, which yep. burned really quickly. So, yeah. We sent you some of those pictures. You probably saw, you know, mm-hmm. in that link. It's pretty impressive how quickly that fire went through.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's become a more and more of a challenge in this scabland country with yeah. the climate, you know, being drier and hotter. We're seeing more and more of these fires, and that's really kind of changed our, I guess, mindset as far as what we're planning and where we're planning. Yep. You know, in the past, there's been a lot of plantings of juniper. Juniper and fire do not mix. But what we found is if you go with the native species, the chokecherries, the hawthorns, you know, some of the other varieties, they're fire tolerant. You know, they might burn up in a fire, but they'll resprout at the roots and stuff. So, you know, if you're putting your time and effort into these habitat projects, you got to kind of think through that you want to make sure that you're planting the right species that can withstand those fires.
I'll pass the baton back to Marissa. I do have one more question before I do. As Marissa was reading the intro, it did jump out to me that you guys wrote the word scablands, and you just mentioned it again. And I was like, I don't recall that term in any of my 23 years with the organization. So visually, can you describe what visually scablands look like from a Washington, is it Washingtonians? Perspective?
Jeff, do you want to tackle this one or you want me to?
Go for it. Okay. Go for it, yeah.
Well, when we're talking about scablands, it's basalt out there, right? And there, I'm sure you've heard about the big Missoula flood. There was a big, and again, I'm no expert on geology and stuff, but there was a great big flood, prehistoric time. Enormous amount of water came across the Columbia Plateau there. And created these plateaus and washed away a lot of the soil, and you have a lot of this basalt rock that is exposed, and it's, you know, it's typical thin soil. Again, this area does not necessarily receive a lot of rainfall, which creates challenges with our habitat projects. You're looking at 10 to 12 inches of rain annually. Wow. You get sagebrush out there, you get rabbit brush, but it's primarily grasslands out there. And unfortunately, with the amount of grazing over the years and stuff, a lot of that has converted to cheatgrass, mustard, and, you know, less desirable species. So there's definitely opportunities there to try to restore that habitat, but it's definitely a challenge given the soil conditions, the climate, the precipitation, and all that stuff. But yeah, we call it scablands, but that's basically what you're talking about.
It's such a visual terminology. And so, Bob, I'm so glad that you asked, because I was kind of sitting here thinking the same thing as he mentioned it again. I was like, I don't know what that is. I'm going to Google it later. So, well, Mike, one of the things that really stood out, you know, to me when I was reading the submission from last year's project was, you know, you arrived and there's people that are camping out, and there's people from other states that came in to work on this project. How did people outside of the state even learn about this? How did you, you know, bring all these individuals in to work on this common project?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges when you're designing these projects, right? You we can put all the resources and stuff behind it, but really it's not going to be a successful project without the volunteers. So we've learned early on communication is key, and we reach out to all the other habitat organizations, conservation groups, and you know, to their officers, and send them emails and let them know that there's an upcoming project, you know, save the date. We also use social media, the Facebook and our website. And then, you know, yeah, I think this last year we reached out to the Mule Deer Foundation, Backwoods Anglers, Audubon Society. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, that's kind of an interesting relationship right there, right? Audubon Society and Pheasants Forever. But it was a great collaboration. They had a lot of volunteers that came out and helped us, and we had some really great conversations. You know, obviously, they're interested in improving the habitat for the songbirds and stuff like that, and everything we're doing, you know, helps them as well, right? You know, as far as, you know, seeing those people show up, that's always a big relief for me. Right. You plan these projects, you put all these resources, and then you're kind of at the whim of who shows up. Right. And these projects are usually out in the middle of nowhere. Right. So, the Swanson Lake project was 2 hours from the closest major metropolitan area. So you're drawing people a long ways away. And, you know, these projects are fun, but they're also, there's a lot of work to be done. So we ask people to be there at 8:30 in the morning. So that's an early start for people to drive all the way out there. And then, like you said, for people that are traveling further distances, you know, it's important that you provide accommodations for camping, and we've had a number of people take advantage of it. And that creates another great opportunity for networking and, you know, talking about the project and stuff. So, none of this is possible without the volunteers, right? So, you know, you're always hopeful that they're going to show up, and every project we've had, we've been just amazed at the turnout. Again, because of the where we're doing these projects, we have to start fairly early, and weather is never a certainty in April, right? So you're dealing with, we've been out there in snow, sleet, hail, rain, sunshine, wind, they are always there. And I will tell you, I am so impressed with their work ethic. I mean, from a person that puts these programs together, it's really challenging to design a project that you can stay in front of the volunteers. This last volunteer we had, project we had this last year, or just a few weeks ago, we had 65 volunteers show up. The amount of work 65 volunteers can do, and trying to keep everybody busy when they show up, it keeps you on your toes. But it was very successful, and we had a lot of fun. But yeah, it's pretty impressive what a group like that can get accomplished.
It's powerful. That's awesome. It's really powerful when you get all those individuals together. And you know, I want to come back to that. I got a couple more questions on this last year's project, but I want to come back to what you've been up to, you know, this year as well. So, Jeff, you know, I hate to put you on the spot on this, but the narrative of this submission was truly beautiful. You know, it's reading through it, it's easy to see, you know, why you were definitely in the top pick and then, you know, won the grand prize this last year. So you're our wordsmith, correct?
Yeah, I am. I love to write.
What did you think of the process of capturing that entire weekend and then doing it in just a few hundred words?
Well, you know, for me, I wanted to tell a story because I knew a lot of different people were going to read this, and I had to think about where did I want to start. And it went back to the beginning with the fire, and I wanted to start there to create that story to give a person an idea of how did we get to this point right now. And so that's kind of what I did. And then so I started talking to people out at the project. I asked Mike some questions. I asked some of our volunteers that were also involved from the Audubon Society and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to get some ideas of how this started and where it went. And then, just on my drive out there, like Mike was talking about the Scablands, my drive out there and why I said it was a special place, it was amazing. It's, you're like driving through almost like these desert-like conditions, even though that they have small sections of water. They're going to disappear by the time summer comes, but it was just so beautiful, and it just really stuck out to me as being this amazing place. And as far as writing, I really wanted to include everybody that was there. I thought that was really important. And then I wanted to convey a message of what it was that we were really doing. And what we were really doing is we were collaborating with so many different people who have different goals and different ideas. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same page when it comes to conservation. And that was what the big message that I wanted to convey, because I think that's really the future of conservation. Is it doesn't matter which group you're in or who you are or what you believe, but if you guys can all get on the same page, you can get so much more accomplished for the greater good. And that's really what I wanted to say. And it just came to me. And then I worked with Mike, and I worked with Kim, who from the Audubon Society, and I ran it past him, and we shared ideas again, collaborating, and we switched some things up, and then came to the final product. And it was fun to write. I enjoyed it. I think our chapter members enjoyed reading it, and it's something that got published in the journal. So I know. I had some people reach out to our chapter that said, "Hey, I read about all the good things that you're doing just by reading that little blurb in the journal," and they volunteered to give us some things for our fundraiser so that we could raise more funds for habitat projects and put those dollars back into the ground. And that's what we're all about.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And the submission was truly beautiful. Kind of talking on that and the full circle of, people reaching out to you and offering things to help you raise funds. Mike or Jeff, whoever wants to kind of tackle this one, you shared with us ahead of time that the, winning prize that you guys received maybe assisted you a little bit in this year's project. Could you tell us what that looked like?
It absolutely did. And I mean, I'll let Mike speak about this too, but we decided that we were going to go big with this, and I'm going to write another story about what we did with this year's project. And I already have the title. It's going to be called "Go Big: A Commitment to Conservation." And then I'm going to let Mike speak on how we used the Onyx dollars on this project.
Yeah, no, again, we, like I said, been a chapter for 20 years, and there were times when we had maybe four or five members come into the meetings, and we were struggling, and we did not know if we were going to survive. And the average age, I was the young guy, which is pretty sad. We had most of our members, 70, 75, and, they had the heart, but it was getting more and more difficult to go out there and plant shrubs and stuff. So we kind of made a commitment probably 4 or 5 years ago that we needed to do something different. We needed an outreach to try to get more volunteers, younger people. And, we started trying to, and what we found is, and we sent some questionnaires out to our various members, and everybody, the number one thing is, they wanted us to do habitat work, and they wanted to get involved with habitat work. Yep. So we figured that was the key for us increasing participation in the chapter, getting people more active. So that's what we started doing. And the last couple of years, we've seen a dramatic increase in people coming to the meetings, getting excited. And I think that was all capped off with that article, that wonderful article that Jeff submitted in our project, and then winning that award, the publicity we got from that, and being able to share that with other habitat organizations. And I will say that we got more donations this year than I think all the other years combined. And we want that momentum to continue. And like Jeff said, you know, I kind of looked at everybody and says, well, what do we want to do next year? And the consensus was, let's go big. So I said, okay, guys, but with going big, that, you know, triples the amount of work. And we are very fortunate that we have a pretty active chapter. And when I need volunteers, those hands go up. And that's really helpful because people don't understand these habitat projects are a lot of fun the day of the project. But most of the work's done well before that. It's the preparation. And this last project we did this last year, when we said go big, it's three times bigger than last year's project that we won. And not only did we do 1,600 plants in the ground, we did two pollinator plots, three food plots, and a three-acre restoration for brood and nesting habitat. Mm-hmm. And that was all done in about a three-week period. And wow. So that required, I mean, the before our project on Saturday, the Tuesday before we had the plants delivered, we had 10 volunteers help to, you know, get those plants. Like I said, there was just enormous amount of work. And again, none of this is possible without volunteers. And it's the chapter members that are there every meeting and stuff that stepped up and helped, you know, with getting this project planned and prepared so that when the volunteers show up, they can get to work. And it's very essential, you know, we treat our volunteers with a lot of respect. We know they're coming from a long ways away. They're coming out there. They want to do a worthwhile project, and they want to get to work. And you can't have a lot of people standing around. So, that, again, you want to have everything all laid out, ready to go. And, you know, we had 65 people there, and they're, you know, it's cold, it's windy, and they want to get to work. And you just, you know, turn them loose, and then you try to stay in front of them, and it's almost impossible. But it's great. So, but, yeah.
I wanted to add something to what Mike was talking about there. Just chapters may wonder, you know, if you have a winning piece or habitat project that you do, and what are you going to do next? You know, we want to lead by example. And so, you know, we think it's really just important to take our winnings and put all of that right back into the ground and not sit and wait and let it sit in an account someplace. We want to make something happen. And so for those chapters that are wondering, you know, what to do, what can we do, you know, just like Mike said, go big, you know, dream big, think about what you want to do. I think that's what's really important in that, what other chapters should know.
That's a fabulous mindset, because there is a mentality to, you know, we got to raise this money, but, you know, it's not enough yet to go buy a piece of property, or it's not enough yet to go do as, you know, a big a project as we want. But you're so right, Jeff. It's like that those dollars, even if it's not big enough yet, it's not doing anything sitting in an account.
Right.
You're putting those dollars to work, whatever it is, $5,000 or $50,000 for an on-the-ground something is better than the interest it's gained in sitting in an account. I so love that comment. Andy, you were flagging here.
Yeah, I think the word collaboration has been said like 12 times.
Yep.
And it's super important. You know, and all the time, you know, I've been in nonprofits and work with volunteers for the majority of my adult life. Working on, and then in addition to like youth sports and, you know, local groups, and the key you guys continue to hit on, and it just rings clear, is it just comes off as this welcoming group, right? This collaboration where nobody's idea is too small or too stupid. It's, you know, you've kind of seemed to have set up this welcoming, all hands on deck, all ideas are welcome, and everything's a let's vet through it, right? And I think that the buy-in that you're seeing with your volunteers is super commendable with how you guys have kind of attacked that. That's a super important piece, in my opinion, on top of this. Cause in reality, that was kind of really at the heart of when this campaign started, was getting people outside of chapters looped in and just see what kind of great work is being done on the landscape by our PF and QF chapters. So the collaboration piece. I think it's been said like 12 times, and it's awesome. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and to add to the collaboration, and I didn't touch upon this, but this was really kind of cool. This shrub planting that we did this year, 3 plots, 70 feet by 300 foot plots, you know, 550 plants per plot, but we needed to lay the landscape fabric. And because of our relationship with the state Fish and Wildlife Department, they had offered to come out and help us lay that fabric beforehand. And that required us to mow the area, rototill the area, and lay the fabric. But the state decided they wanted to use that as a training opportunity for all the private lands biologists in the state. So we had 30 private lands biologists plus their technicians come to the project. This was 3 weeks before our major project to lay out the fabric. They got training on how to do that with the various machineries. They had a lot of people there that this was their first job out of school. They hadn't run a tractor. So there was that opportunity. What even made it great is Eric Lewis, our new APF person out of Spokane, invited all his recent hires in the state, all the PF biologists. We have 6 brand new biologists. They came out, and there was a great opportunity for collaboration between the state biologists and the PF biologists. And, you know, we kind of helped facilitate that. So that was really cool. So like you say, that collaboration, working with everybody. And then the last day, they came out and laid our fabric. And then the next day, we did a joint project where PF, our chapter, purchased the fencing and the fabric. And they purchased the shrubs. And we planted another 500 shrubs on another planting on private land, feel free to hunt area. So like, wow. I said, it just kind of grows on itself. So yeah, we're really excited about that. And we even talked, you know, in hindsight, what we should have done is reached out to all the other chapters in the state, the PF chapters, invite the habitat chairman to have that networking, to develop those relationships with the biologists. And so that's something we talked about maybe doing in, you know, next year. So
And we did have two, maybe 3 chapters that came to our project, Habitat Chairman, that were wanting to learn from Mike, because honestly, he could give a master class in habitat conservation. Yes, you could, Mike. No, yes, you could. No. He's embarrassed when I say that, but you know what? He's amazing at what he does, really.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, it was really great to see the other chapters show up. We had a relatively new chapter that just, you know, wanted to see how these projects are put together and, you know, kind of learn the steps and stuff. So I think there's opportunities there for that collaboration as well between chapters. And we definitely let them know if there's anything we can assist with. And not that we have all the answers. We've made probably every mistake out there. So from that perspective, we can tell them what to not do. So
I think, I mean, to Andy's point, the collaboration is remarkable. And then, you know, continuing off of that, what you just shared with us, you know, but the other thing that I think is really important here is that, you know, you all showed what it's like to lead by example. And you really went out strong this last year and decided, hey, we can do even more. We can make this even bigger. And, you know, you're already talking about, well, let's do this for next year. And it's really inspiring. I know it's inspiring for me. I think it's inspiring for all of us on this call, and probably all of our listeners. And so, you know, I just really appreciate everything that you guys do. And I'm looking forward to individuals that decide to get out there and do something this year because they listened to this. It means a lot. You know, I'll talk a little bit. I think one of the things I probably should share is, you know, what are some of those incentives and prize offerings for chapters if they haven't heard about this, or they're kind of waffling on whether or not they want to submit a project this year. You know, first I want to go back and thank Onyx Hunt for their support, for their partnership in this. It has really elevated these efforts just to that next level where we can encourage and support our chapters to go out there and do projects like what we've been talking about today. So huge thank you to Onyx for that support. And they're back this year again to support the initiative, the projects in a big way. The the three chapters that are eligible to win funding are at the following amount. So we talked about the grand prize winner. So this year that'll be $7,500 for our grand prize winner. And then we have a Pheasants Forever Habitat Champion, as well as a Quail Forever Habitat Champion. And the winning amount for each one of those chapters is $3,750. So it's a great opportunity. The funds can go to a variety of different projects and initiatives. We certainly love the way that that was utilized from last year's winner. I think that's, again, a great way to lead by example and inspire others with what you did. And then on top of that, all three winners will receive Onyx Hunt hats for their chapter officers, as well as a feature within Onyx Hunt's marketing efforts and our organization's marketing channels, which is exciting to hear just what that's done for you all. Kind of the unexpected just results that you've seen from some of those efforts. So that's exciting. Just a couple key dates to throw out there. So qualifying events, we say, you know, Hands-On Habitat Month is the month of May, but qualifying events can actually take place between April 1st and June 31st. So you have time. If you haven't planned anything yet or created an event yet, you've got time to do it. Don't worry. And then make sure that you register your event on our Upland Events platform. That's really important to make you eligible for those prizes. Anybody who submits their event in that Upland Event platform is eligible for those two Habitat Champion prizes. But if you want to win the grand prize, then you're going to have to submit a project submission form. And you can find that in the chapter resource portal this year. You all should be familiar with that. It'll be on the main page. And you go on there, fill it out, submit it. It'll automatically kick it back to us to review. And just make sure you get those in no later than July 7th. We're going to give you some time to fill those out. That way you can think through it and, you know, craft the perfect story and photos and get that submitted to us. And then we will announce the winners on July 17th. So we got a little bit of time, but it's coming. I'm excited. I've already got a couple submissions in. So really looking forward to what we have this year.
Well done, Marissa. So I've got to ask, was that a pup? Like, ready to...
Oh, yes. Did you hear that? I was hoping. Well, oh, darn it.
You were a pro. You got through all of that information, and you were a pro the entire time. But I was thinking to myself, boy, she's really hungry and her stomach is growling. Or that is it Reese or Yeti that is?
No, it's Yeti. It's of Yeti. Course it's Yeti. It's around dinner time, and so she's letting me know. And I don't, for those that can't, you know, see me, I'm leaning over and I'm trying to like keep her busy. So she's right now, like, talking through it.
You're on brand. So I, you know, it's
GSP owner.
It's wonderful. I mean, that's the reality, the authenticity of our volunteers and our employees. You know, we the soundtrack of the. Of the impatient bird dog.
It wouldn't be a podcast or any kind of video recording with me if there wasn't a short hair.
Yeah,
in the background. It's official.
It's official. It's wonderful. I just want to underscore. You mentioned Onyx. Onyx is absolutely some of the best partners we have ever had in, you know, the 4 decades plus of this organization. I think about Federal Ammunition and Purina, and over the last 10 years as Onyx has kind of come onto the scene, you know, whether it's the PATH program, the Build a Wildlife Area program, national sponsorship, Hands-On Habitat, this podcast, Onyx is absolutely phenomenal from, you know, understanding the contributions of a national organization, but then also contributing here with our chapter volunteers in these prizes to motivate just another level of participation. So again, you mentioned it, but I'll reiterate it. Thank you to Onyx. Thank you to all the chapters that are listening. You know, there's a big window of opportunity here from April 1st all the way to June 31st, where, you know, a lot of projects are being done across the landscape. And, you know, take this seriously. You know, this is a, you know, you've heard Mike talk about, you know, what Jeff's words have done to help perpetuate volunteerism in these communities. It builds on each other. It builds on, you know, here's a chapter that, you know, I don't remember exactly the time frame you said, Mike, maybe a decade ago, chapter was limping along. And now with some infusion of energy, some different voices, you know, some younger voices, your son, you know, and it builds. Just be open to those different thoughts, and you can harness magic. And it does feel like you guys have harnessed some magic. And, you know, normally when we do podcasts like this, talking with volunteers about, you know, why'd you volunteer? Why'd you stay? Why do you keep putting on banquets? Why do you keep doing projects? And the answer to that motivation question is generally twofold. It's, I love these places, you know, and Jeff talked about that as he was mentioning how he composed his writing. We've talked about upland birds bring us to these most beautiful places in the world, whether it's a weird term like scabland or, you know, the savannas, the glades, the prairies, the sagebrush. They take us to these great places where we all find peace and happiness and love. And it's why we all care about these organizations and chasing these birds and our connection to being human beings. The secondary piece, which is often the primary piece for a lot of people, and I think Mike talked about this a lot as he mentioned volunteers, it's the human-to-human, person-to-person connections. You know, some of our best friends come from these relationships that are, you know, Pheasants Forever Banquet or Quail Forever Habitat Project are the catalyst to meeting somebody that shares the same loves of the same places and the bird dogs that you do. And those two things, I mean, it's kind of what life is about. And it really speaks to the magic of this organization and the magic of people that, you know, sprinkle this fairy dust across the prairies and across the scabland. So again, I mentioned it a couple of times, but thank you guys. It's folks like you that inspire people like us to keep charging forward every single day. So hopefully listeners feel similarly. As Marissa mentioned, the main landing pages, pheasantsforever.org and quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. All the information about upcoming events, prizes, what qualifies, pretty much everything qualifies, just be smart with fire. But you could find out a whole lot of information as we, here's my baseball analogy. I kind of have a couple. Zach Greinke was the first one. As we round third and head towards home, we'll go round the horn with closing thoughts. And well, Jeff, the wordsmith, can kick us off with the leadoff position. Sure. And what your closing thoughts are on hands-on habitat.
Well, if I want to get to that in one moment, but I wanted to just say thank you to all our volunteers that came out, and I didn't get a chance to do that. They mean so much to our chapter, and then our members within our chapters that come to the meeting. I know they'll be listening to this, and thank you for all that you guys do, and all our sponsors. Thank you. My thoughts are for the other chapters out there is that whatever dream you have that you want to do with your habitats, just go for it. Don't shy away from it. Engage your members. Listen to what they have to say, and then a sign that I used to have in my classroom that sticks out to me to this day is none of us are smart as all of us. Collaborate. and we could do so much more better together rather than one person trying to do it all. And so, yeah.
You know, in hindsight, if we would have made a drinking game around the word collaborate, we'd all be hammered right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe when we listen.
Yeah. Mike, tell us your closing thoughts.
Well, again, would like to thank Onyx, obviously. That grant was huge, and we want to keep that momentum going. So thank you for that. And then PF as well, you know, for your guys' support and stuff. You know, getting the word out, letting people know what we're accomplishing as a chapter, I think is so important. And like Jeff said, we couldn't do it without our volunteers. So again, a big shout out to all our volunteers and chapter members that are willing to give their time and help us, you know, prepare these projects and do all the planning and stuff. So again, I can't say enough about that, but looking forward to next year. And I don't know if we're going to go bigger. I'm kind of thinking we might go the other direction, but we'll see. I'm still recovering from the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. So ask me in another month.
You're going to go huge. I'm just throwing
gargantuan.
There you go. You're going to be the habitat juggernaut of Washington. we're gonna let Marissa have put a bow on. So we'll go to Andy with his closing thoughts.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time, you know, talking about chapters and, you know, advice to chapters and whatever. And for any of the listeners out there that feel like maybe this hasn't been directed towards them, I think that might be maybe this is your calling card to find a chapter near you. And to become a part of what's going on in the landscape, whether that be in Washington or Nebraska or Minnesota or whatever. There's a lot of individuals out there who have ideas on projects that they want to be a part of, and they can see some of this Onyx grant dollars go to work in their area. And the cool part about it is it's got to go to a chapter so that way it comes back into the habitat and into the work we're doing. So if you're not a part of a chapter yet, you know, this is a chance to check out your area and find one or maybe create one. And the other piece is if that's not possible for you, there's other opportunities to get involved. There'll also be a hands-on habitat themed auction going on throughout the course of May. So look for that around May 12th. We'll probably be around the start where you'll start seeing some of that marketing come through. But it was a wildly successful deal from last year where a lot of money came in that if you weren't able to get out and actually put your boots in the ground and get your hands dirty, this was one way to collect some cool gear. There's some great guns. There's always some great products from Polaris. There's a few opportunities to hunt within this auction coming up. So keep an eye out for that if you don't have a chapter to be a part of, or maybe you want to just follow up your habitat work on a Saturday or Sunday with a new Polaris or something like that. So keep an eye out for that as this month rolls on too. But again, Onyx being a big part of that and all of our sponsors. So just thank everybody for all of that and the volunteers doing great work, as we've said already. So.
Great point, Andy. Thanks very much for bringing on up the auction. Please do look for our Hands-On Habitat online auction in mid-May. It'll be on both our websites and across our social channels. Marissa Jensen, thank you for being the quarterback of Hands-On Habitat Month. Go ahead and put a bow on this episode for us.
Thanks, Bob. And thank you so much, Mike, Jeff, to your entire chapter, all the efforts that has gone into, you know, both of your projects, all the work that you've done, you know, outside of those projects too. I I've said it already, but I truly was inspired by what you guys shared with us, you know, and I really hope that our listeners were as well, you know, and it gives them some ideas. Some excitement to get out there, you know, and just like Andy said, if you're not already connected with a local chapter, I hope this is a really great, you know, reason for you to find someone, a chapter nearby. We've got a great resource on our website, a find a chapter, where you type in your zip code and it'll generate the closest chapter to you. If you don't have a local chapter, reach out to us. It's a great time to start a chapter and really just generate that excitement that you've heard today and continue to grow from that. And, you know, if none of those things are an option, get out there and do some habitat work with your family, with some friends. You know, it's every little bit makes a difference. You can get involved with our auction. You can become a member. There's just this, the sky is the limit in how you can participate in Hands-On Habitat Month. And really, no effort is too small. We're just excited to, you know, be part of this and to, you know, gather the excitement and to, you know, just see what comes from it. So looking forward to all the submissions this year, looking forward to seeing all the photos and the videos and the excitement from everybody out there. And I'm just thankful that I get to be a part of it as well.
All right, right on. And I want to see dirty fingernails. So, you know, send us photos. Send us your habitat making photos. Get dirty. Get dirty for habitat. That's been a slogan I've tried to make popular. And
No.
Just hasn't taken off.
I don't know
off.
Why it didn't stick, yeah.
But get out there, do some good things, and you know what? Pick up some trash along the way. It'll make the world a better place. For Marissa, for Andy, for Jeff, and for Mike, thank you for being a part of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Get involved. Pheasants Forever, quailforever.org/hands-on-habitat. You can actually make a difference on this planet. You really can. Just takes a little bit of effort. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.